Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation. So we do have a comment left over from yesterday, so I guess we'll use that. Where the hell is it? There it is. Alright. So it gives an excuse to change the subject a little bit. I guess that's okay. I could make some other comments on kinetic energy and its failures, more lever arguments, more basic mechanisms that disprove it. Even relativity sort of goes out the window if you pay any attention to physical reality. That is, there's a difference between a light object hitting a heavy object and the light object's moving and the heavy object moving. I mean, if we were supposed the whole universe was moving 50 miles an hour in a direction, the amount of energy required for the whole universe to move in a direction versus one little tiny object to move 50 miles an hour. Huge difference. And, of course, difference in the outcome. But anyway, so you can tell which one actually is moving based on how it actually lands and all of that stuff. So maybe I'll, read this first before we go to the board. All right. Easy to disprove your particle light, even if I make them pass through each other. So again, it doesn't have to pass through each other. They can bounce off of each other if you logically say they're floating in free space and there's no atmosphere, there's no anything else to dampen the reactions. The idea is they would exchange. With any kind of interaction, because they're all the same object, they just exchange whatever motion they have. So if you do that, then you could say, well, it wouldn't matter. When they hit each other, there's no difference than if they don't hit each other, because you still have one thing moving this way and one thing moving that way. So I've already explained that so many times. So you're just trolling, to pretend you haven't already heard the counter argument to that nonsense. All right, anyway, you have no destructive interference. So again, it's obvious that what constructive means is that you can see the photon, and what destructive means is you can't see it. So the idea isn't that complicated. So again, this is something I've been over already, but we'll go over it again, apparently. I guess I can move one of these up or down to fix that. Yeah, I'll move that up. All right. The difference between, I can debunk your theory by just saying you have a theory that waves, are radiating somewhere, and one single little point somewhere is where the wave's going to land, and everything else, somehow just disappears out of the universe. Doesn't sound reasonable. Okay. Sounds like crap. All right. So you're saying that this is somehow essential when I just reduce that to this, and the same understanding of a frequency, that is a wavelength between objects, can be understood. So let's understand. Feynman didn't like this theory, waves. Didn't think this worked because it was going everywhere. And clearly he didn't think it was consistent with Einstein's understanding, his interpretation of photon models, where obviously it was understood that the whole idea of quantum of energy, the idea that it was a discrete bit of energy that was being exchanged by objects, that you couldn't have a half of a quanta or half of this or half of that. And so it wasn't like some continuous blob of energy flowing through space, that it was discrete elements being exchanged, $5 pieces or 50 cent pieces or whatever you want to call them, that it was discrete money. All right. And clearly, obviously, if all I have to do is I combine two where they're out of phase and I don't have the same frequency anymore. I mean, clearly this frequency, is not this frequency. And Now, the catch is with light, you really can't see that happen. I mean, the idea of being able to superimpose two larger wavelength photons on top of each other out of phase and create a higher frequency. Partly because the range of visible light isn't wide enough. So you can't take a visible photon and convert it into a visible photon on the other end. But the fact that that range is that range, the fact that there is a range, sort of indicates that there's that other factor of polarization that exists. And the catch is that the polarization, that is the spread of the phenomenon, how big a surface you can catch it on, right? They made this new telescope, and they had to make it really big on purpose because it's catching bigger pieces, hunks of light. They actually hit more surface. They actually need more surface to hit, to be collected as a photon. It takes more surface for them to land on because their spread, their polarization, is longer because they're bigger, they're wider, and there's that definite proportional relationship. So the catch is you can't really make two things that have a wide spread, right? You can't combine them, okay, to create something that would have a small polarization. So you can't take two reds and make a blue. But what they can do, okay, and they do for their fake entanglement experiments, is you can take a crystal, okay, and you can pop the light in, and you'll get two half the frequency beams out of the one that goes in. And they are beams. I mean, they are going in a direction. They're not waving in through the space. They're rays. They come out of specific little angles, reliable angles they come out at, okay, different from each other. So anyway, I can disprove your theory pretty easily by just saying this isn't happening. And then I can show the two-slit experiment actually being done where your scientists can't say or describe any of it accurately, where you just pretend the real pattern, the pattern they don't talk about, that is the two patterns superimposed on each other, right? The two patterns can't be created by two waves. Then you have to come up with four waves, and then you're really in trouble. Yeah. A little snarky bitch. Anyway, so let's move on. You have no destructive interference. So clearly the destructive interference is in the form of the fact that you don't have the same, you don't have the right frequency. You don't have to destroy the photon. You don't have to destroy the elements, the energy, to destroy the receivability. So you can do the same thing to a radio signal. You can jam it. You're not destroying the original signal by jamming the signal. So again, your whole concept of destructive interference, I would argue, is nonsense on its face. That wasn't so hard. Yeah, it wasn't that hard to debunk your silly thing. I just say the word jamming. You don't destroy energy by jamming a signal. You would have no bright band of light. So of course you will have bands of light because everything's very frequency dependent. Tiny changes in the frequency, I mean tiny relative to the whole spectrum, makes the difference between red and blue light. I mean, you don't need to change much in the frequency to change the very nature of the photon. So again, you're just talking shit. Yeah. With slightly brighter band of light. So no, there would be no slightly brighter band. You can't be a different frequency and say it changes the intensity at all. You're not changing the number of bits or quanta, except in this case where you break the photon on the surface and half the photon goes through, that is half of its energy and half doesn't. And it all depends on your theory of what you're measuring anyway, right? So, I mean, I can debunk you by just pointing out, that, maybe I'll do it this way. Well, good enough. Pointing out that, you know, you don't pay any attention to what you're actually measuring when you measure a photon, that you're measuring electricity, you know, that you're measuring some other phenomenon and deducing the photon from measuring that. You're never measuring the actual photon. And what is electricity? And, you know, it's kind of obvious that it has involves atoms, entire atoms. So you can't just hit a tiny electron with a magical little photon and say, there, photon made electricity. Because the photon obviously has to do more than that. It has to create a cascade event among atoms to create what we call electricity. So it's got to have elements to it that cause more than one effect. And I would argue that's the polarization. Polarization isn't something in the light itself, you know, as it's moving, so to speak. I mean, it's in there, but it's not something the light, like it makes any difference in where the quanta are coming in, you know, whether or not they have this, you know, arrangement in them where there's three photons, these three elements are in the right polarization, okay, to cause electricity. Because the key is that more than one event has to happen. So the photon is a composite object. And the event has to happen where it hits, and then it hits again just at the right time to push more energy, and then it hits again just at the right time to push more energy to get the electron to kick, to create what we call electricity. So you don't have any theory. You can't draw any of this. You can't show me anybody drawing your photon, your interactions, none of it. You have nothing. All right. The reason you have no destructive is because you have no refraction. So refraction is just deflection. So again, they're just saying that this word belongs to waves and waves alone. Only a wave can refract, whatever the hell that is, frankly. You know, it's some sort of, what, you know, it's always caused by physical objects. Okay, where the wave hits a physical object and it moves at a different speed and it creates a new wave because of the change in the speed. So you need a mechanical thing, and you don't have any description of how photons are doing that when they go by a surface of a piece of, you know, soot. Why are they, what's the photon's reaction? How are they interacting with the soot to cause the refraction? But anyway, it's just deflection. So refraction is just when something hits partially and deflects. There's obviously no rule against the same mechanism, in the sense that refraction in a particle model would just mean that, say, you did have an electron, and the electron had a little bit of momentum, and the photon, the element of the photon, hits the electron and gives it a little bit of momentum in this new direction. And so the new direction of the electron, instead of being this direction, is now this direction. So it's pushing into a universe. You know, instead of pushing into it this way, it pushes into it that way. Well, that means that it's going to reflect more energy in that direction and not that direction. So what gets reflected to the universe in terms of what quanta are bouncing off that electron and where they're going to end up, just as this one, when it went in, it was going in a direction, okay? When it comes out, it's going to be coming out in some other direction. When this thing hits new energy, the energy it's going to be releasing is going to be in some other direction. So the photon changes its direction, the electron changes its direction. Refraction. Again, you just, you know, claim words belong to you and only to you, which is just idiotic. I could just call it deflection and just say there, deflection accounts for anything you're calling a refraction. I can duplicate a refraction with merely a deflection. All right, refraction only happens with waves. It's our own special word, blah, 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 blah. Saying that electrons scatter light, right? And the scatter is in the form, again, of just changing for a period of time what the force is doing. So while, yeah, it's still there. Well, maybe I'll clean up a little so I have some room to write. I appear to be back. All right, so let's pull this up. All right, so it says, saying that electrons scatter light is like saying water waves scatter another water wave. So it really isn't. It's completely unnecessary to pretend a force bounces off of a force or anything like that, but certainly the interaction between the forces and the matter can be understood in lots of ways, at least to the best of my knowledge, which what I say is pretty thin. That is a reasonable analogy. No, it isn't. And even if I was to accept your analogy, I could demonstrate that the water kind of has the same rules as the Newton's cradle. You know, when you're mixing two frequencies of wave in water, they blend differently than when you mix higher frequencies with lower frequencies. So, you know, you're more likely to get scatter. But regardless, it's pretty easy to understand scatter in a couple of ways. You could understand it's just stuff bouncing off of stuff, but I'd say that's incorrect. I mean, you do have to go as deep as possible. Yeah, we want to get rid of that. So look, my whole argument is centered on understanding that electrons are in a dense field of little particles. So the electron's sitting here, and it's constantly, there's stuff heading right for it, okay? Stuff, all kinds of locations heading right for it, it's going to hit it, blah, blah, blah. Everything in the universe is stuck with that because we're all surrounded by energy, and little pieces of it are going to travel through the space we occupy. And it's just going to be like a bunch of rays coming in from all directions. And so every time an electron moves, it changes that universe, because if it's here, then it's reflecting very little in that direction, and if it's here, it's reflecting a lot in that direction. So the view the something in the universe has is constantly changed every time an electron moves from one position to another position. So the idea would be is that when energy, momentum in the form of a piece of a photon hits an electron, it sticks. Now, if the electron is coming right at it, it already has momentum, then the argument would be is that the piece reflects and nothing happens, in the sense that nothing's going to happen except now the electron's going to stop moving, because you reflected away from it a piece of momentum. So again, you can see the picture that this going in is the same as this reflection going out. And so essentially you have the same reaction. Whether you hit it or you don't hit it, you have the same universe left over. And the only thing that changes is where this thing's going, whether it is moving or it's not moving. And that's the key point. So what happens is energy is constantly coming in to atoms with electrons. And that energy can have a frequency. You know, there can be bits at a frequency. It can have, you know, it has a character. And the fact is when the electron moves, if I force the electron, if I hit it and I force it to move, it's going to move into that energy, and it's going to be dragged by that energy in the sense that it's going to hit more stuff going the direction it's moving than hit in the opposite direction, quite obviously. So if you were to look at what these two fields, they start off even, all right? I have two sides pushing, and they have the same energy in them. Well, what's going to happen if that electron now is, I make it move, is I send one more piece going this way, and I make the electron move into this field. Well, it means that this field can't reflect at the same time, because now the electron went from here, you know, went from here to here, all right, A to B. So what happens from the point of view of this side of the universe? Well, this reflection isn't going to happen as fast. Right, so stuff was bouncing back at a rate, and all of a sudden now there's a gap. So there was a bunch of stuff bouncing back. When this moved to here, there was less stuff bouncing back. So you had, you know, a consistent amount of stuff bouncing back, and then all of a sudden now, nope, no stuff. And then if it stops, because it is moving into energy, so it will stop probabilistically, it's going to stop. Okay. Then it'll start again. And so what do you end up with? Oh, you end up with an on and then an off and then an on. And what's going to happen in the other direction is going to be exactly the opposite, right? I mean, stuff wasn't supposed to reflect till it got all the way over here to A. and then it was supposed to reflect. So any frequency going in, right? So a frequency going in over here, it got widened. That is, the separation between stuff got bigger because of that movement. The exact opposite will happen to stuff coming from this direction. When it moves into it, it's going to start narrowing in that frequency, and it'll make the things tighter. Okay, so they'll be a lot closer to each other because of the pushing them together. The fact that they're going to reflect earlier here, and earlier here, and earlier here, that means they're going to reflect with less nothing between them, because you're changing the position of the electron. So when the electron moves, it increases the frequencies ahead of it, and it decreases the frequencies of anything that's coming from behind it. So it's, you know. So, and it's that's perfectly consistent with what's observed in the universe. And so the point is that the scatter happens because of how much motion there is in the electron before it got hit. So it's in a universe kind of just jiggling about. And then one moment it can be have a little bit of momentum this way or a little bit of momentum that way. So when this photon interacts, the electron is in all probability moving in some direction. And so that gets combined, and then instead of this photon pushing the electron in this direction, it pushes it in this direction. So obviously that push will be represented by a reflection in the field, okay, that will be in this direction instead of that direction. And that would be scatter. And it just kind of depends on the motion of the molecules. So the ones in atmosphere, you can sort of understand, have a lot of distance between each other. They're not tightly compressed, so their motions are likely very slow. So they stay relatively transparent, and we can see through them. And the ones on surfaces are likely to be more energetic because of how close they are to each other. So they're going to vibrate at a higher speed or frequency, and therefore they're going to cause more scatter off of them, off of those kinds of surfaces. And again, that's what you basically see. I guess you get into some atmospheric kind of arguments, you know, about how much distortion you get because of the heat, you know, the water molecules moving quicker near the surfaces, and how much distortion you get in what you're seeing because of the movement of those molecules while the photons are interacting with them. They're moving, and that's causing the deflection of the light, the scatter of the light, and things get blurrier and blurrier because there's not a straight line that your energy's traveling anymore. It's traveling a slightly jiggedy little, you know, line, you know, and it's blurring what would have been a clear image because the electrons have too much motion and aren't transferring energy in a nice one electron to the next electron. It's not a nice straight line because the electrons are moving too much and adding too much extra deflection to the direction that the energy was traveling. All right, I think that probably says all that needs to be said. The reason you have no destructive interference is because you have no refraction. Okay, and saying electrons scatter light is like saying water waves scatter another water wave. Again, why would I bother with your wave analogy? Because it's defeatable on more than one ground. And again, your own professors don't accept it. Feynman didn't like your water analogy. Didn't like your wave analogy. Would have preferred you not be taught wave theory of light. All right. But his theory's dopey because he believes in some sort of random god, you know, that just decides to deflect things for no reason. Things just get deflected. Same conditions in, different conditions out, which doesn't make any sense to anyone who doesn't believe in God. But anyway, our gods, yeah. So maybe we'll just leave it at that. And, you know, there's just the conversation's a little bit dead. We need to get a real person to actually have to defend their arguments against interrogation. They think they can interrogate me, but they never answer any of my questions or respond to any of my points. So it's way too imbalanced, the conversation. And, yeah, so it's just absolute bullshit until some real person is willing to defend the physics against all the rotten history, the rotten logic. Again, I can just say it over and over again that they can't even. I mean, if you ask one of you these believers, and they'll just never answer the question. Here you have a theory of light, and Thomas Young's drawing was incorrect. It's just a fact. So 200 years ago, when you thought this marvelous thing happened where this guy did Newton's experiments in just a slightly different way, and you have some miracle insight into how light functions, the fact is he wasn't getting right answers. The fact is the two-wave theory doesn't work. It doesn't explain the real double-slit pattern. And the only way you can force it to work is to put the two point sources so close to each other that they're one point source, that there can't be a wavelength of difference. You have to destroy half the pattern to be able to find an excuse for the two-wave theory, because it won't work in with anything other than distances smaller than a wavelength of light. It fails as soon as your distance is longer than a wavelength of light, which is ridiculous, because obviously 99% of the slit openings are going to be larger than a wavelength of light. So it's just such bullshit that you've got all this science layered in just absolute crap, and you respond to none of those facts. The fact that you've believed things for no good reason. For over 150 years or 200 years, you believed your people, your type, believed in kinetic energy. You know, you didn't call it that, you called it living force. And it was based on no evidence, no good evidence, and it was getting numbers that were preposterously wrong. I mean, they could have been obviously seen as wrong. They were so wrong. And yet you think they all thought you had proven something. You'd all make stupid statements. Well, how can you not believe in the sacred kinetic energy, the living force? You do this pompous, arrogant horseshit, and you had completely wrong answers. Those are the scientific facts. When are you going to respond to any of that and recognize that your physics isn't got any integrity? The more you scratch at it, okay, the more it's all facade, it's all talk, it's all hype, and there's no substance. There's no logic, for sure. But there's no point in talking to the seven people watching these videos. So yeah, it's a bit of a waste of time. So till the next time, and such, so forth and whatnot. Well, I guess I could just get rid of this stuff. Get rid of that. Then I can slide that out. Yeah, that's good enough. And then I'll just, oops, I can't do that. I can do this. No, can't do that either. This I can do. All right, so that's the one I'll choose. The one I can do. So till the next time, and such and so forth and whatnot. Blah, 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 blah. Talking to the wind. Less than the wind, actually. The wind's probably smarter than the average YouTube viewer. But whatever. Hate this planet and such.